her face. Cade wasn't dead, he wasn't. He was down there somewhere, and they had to rescue him. Hammerholt rumbled again. A fresh crack ran across the ceiling, and a slab of masonry tumbled down, smashing to pieces nearby. Vika looked up, her hand shielding her eyes from the dust. "The ceiling will not hold for long," she said. "If we stay, we will all die. We have the Ember Blade. We can save that, at least." Her face fell as she realized Aaron was no longer carrying it. "Aaron, where is the sword?"
"Grubb got it," said Grubb, emerging from the dusty haze.
He was holding it before him, staring at it with a strange gleam in his eyes.
"Mudgrub very careless to lose something so valuable."
"He's still down there," Aaron snapped, pushing Fenn away. "Aaron," said Fenn softly, "he let go so you wouldn't kill yourself trying to save him. Don't waste the chance he's given you." He loathed her for saying that, hated her for being right. He knew how near this hall was to collapse, knew he was risking all their lives by arguing. He just didn't want to face it. But the truth was the truth. Cade was gone. He stalked away from the edge, pushing angrily past them and out of the hall. The others followed. Behind them, stonework creaked and groaned, and it sounded like the voices of damned spirits, calling him back to share his best friend's doom.
104. Aaron was hardly aware of the rest of the journey through the abandoned reaches of Hammerholt. His mind felt like it had suffered a physical blow. His brain throbbed with loss. An aching hole threatened to open inside his chest, and it was only by furious effort that he could hold it closed and keep the void from consuming him. The others struggled to meet his eye. There was nothing they could offer to salve his grief. In time, they emerged from the empty chambers into the lower reaches of Hammerholt, near where they'd entered. The fortress shuddered periodically, and they heard distant collapses and screams. A thin smoke drifted along the ceiling. A pair of servants spotted them as they ran past, but though they were ragged and bloodstained and carrying swords, the servants were too interested in escape to care. They made their way down as far as they could, reasoning that the lower they went, the fewer people they were likely to find. They only stopped when they reached a level flooded ankle-deep with foul water. Below them, the sewers were still submerged. It would be a long time before they could access the caves, and they didn't have time to wait. They were heading for the Underkeep.
"Aaron, you have the map?" Vika said.
"That way," said Grubb, pointing along the corridor.
"Are you sure?"
"Grubb was born underground. Grubb knows."
They took his word for it and let him lead. He still had the Ember Blade jammed in his belt, its magnificence a ridiculous contrast to the man who wore it. The sight stirred faint concern in Aaron. The skull wasn't the safest choice to carry Ossia's most prized treasure, but he was too numb to do anything about it. The water rose around their legs as they went, and soon they had to climb up a level for Ruck's sake and for Vika's. The druidess was weak, and she was finding it hard to labour through the water, even with Harrod supporting her. The smoke thickened as they went on, and they could hear the crackle of flames. Distant footsteps hurried away from them. Voices called for the lost and fallen. None of it felt real to Aaron. Their predicament reached him through a haze. The others wore worried expressions, wary of fire or collapse or guards, but such concerns were meaningless now. He knew they had a destination, and he followed his companions towards it. More than that was beyond him, in the ringing aftermath of Cade's death. Their route took them towards the fire and past burning rooms. Once, they found their way blocked by rubble and smouldering timbers, and were forced to backtrack and go around. They heard the cries of trapped people,
and encountered several who were trying to find their way out. An armed guard blundered, coughing from a smoky corridor right into their path. He looked them over and staggered the other way. Then, as they passed a doorway, Aaron saw a man on the other side. He was hurrying through the blazing room towards an exit, his arm across his face. It was no more than a glimpse through the smoke, but it brought everything sharply into focus, and the fog lifted from Aaron's senses. Heart. That was heart. Suddenly he couldn't hold back the emotion any more, but it wasn't sadness he felt. It was rage. Rage was safer, easier, better. His back teeth clenched hard enough to hurt. He needed to destroy, to kill, to have his revenge on a world that had ripped his best friend away.
Aaron?
Fenn asked. He'd come to a halt in the doorway, glaring like a madman. I'll catch you up, he heard himself say.
What? No, we must stay together.
There is something I must do, he told her flatly, and he headed into the room before anyone could object. I will catch you up. Go. He was gone too quickly for them to follow. They had the mission and Mara to think about, and his tone didn't allow argument. By the time he was across the room, he'd forgotten them, and the Ember Blade with them. In the midst of his blackest hour, he'd found his father's killer, as if the aspects themselves had put him there. The heat of the flames beat at his skin, and smoke clawed at his throat. At the end of a corridor, he saw his quarry again, a darting figure in a black overcoat disappearing through another doorway. The fortress rumbled around him, but Aaron ignored it. His sword sang from its scabbard as he ran, now bright, now dark, as he passed the scattered fires. Beyond the doorway was a short hall. One wall had partially fallen, leaving a heap of burning rubble blocking the far door. The timbers overhead sagged and creaked, thick wood smoking in the heat from below. Hart was at the end of the hall, searching for a way through the rubble. His hair was red with blood, and he still limped heavily on one ankle. The sight of him ignited a flame in Aaron. His fury was so wild that he trembled on the edge of tears.
Hart!
He roared. The watchman stared at his name and whirled around. When he saw Aaron standing there, wet and bedraggled and blood-spattered, his face changed from shock to mocking incredulity.
You can't be serious, he said.
Draw your sword, Aaron told him.
Get out of my way, he said dismissively. The castle's coming down around our ears.
Draw your sword, Aaron told him, or I'll run you through unarmed. It's more of a chance than you gave my father. Hart had to think for a moment to remember who he was talking about, and that small hesitation brought Aaron's blood to a boil.
That's what this is about?
Hart asked, as if it was something so petty it was amazing Aaron would trouble him with it.
Fight me or die, murderer, Aaron screamed.
Hart rolled his eyes, pulled his blade, and strode along the hall towards Aaron.
You really want to do this now?
Here? He tutted.
Ossians!
Aaron had never felt such hate for the Crodans as he did then. The gods' damned arrogance that oozed from him. They were all responsible, all those square-head bastards that had brought him to tragedy. All Crodans and one other. He felt his hatred condense into a hard knot around one man, one he hated above all now, but who was forever beyond retribution. Garrick. Garrick, the author of all this destruction. Garrick, whose suicidal quest had claimed Cade's life along with his own. He charged, his sword raised and ready. Hart met his first swing, knocked aside a second, then slashed at his ribs. Only Aaron's training saved him. It was a textbook maneuver, and his dodge was an instinctive response. Undeterred, Aaron pressed the attack, hacking at the watchman's guard. Hart, the stronger of the two, deflected the blows with ease, then struck with his free hand. Aaron's vision flared white as a gloved fist lashed across his face, sending him staggering.
He barely got his sword up to parry the thrust that followed. They broke apart, panting. Blood trickled from Aaron's split lip. Hart's hair was mussed, and he wore a fixed grin.
"Last chance, boy. Whether you live or die is neither here nor there to me, but I'm getting out of here one way or another."
There was too much anger in Aaron to permit compromise. He knew Hart was the better swordsman, even with an injured ankle, and he was taller and stronger too. But he'd dash himself against this enemy, even if it meant his death. It was all he could do. He flew forward again with a cry, blade swinging. Hart, infuriatingly calm, stepped back before the assault. He parried, parried, and struck. Aaron felt a sharp pain as the blade nicked his shoulder. His next swing was more savage still, born of frustration. Hart dodged and fainted. Aaron fell for it, and the watchman struck at his throat. Aaron pulled back, but not fast enough to avoid a stinging cut along the underside of his jaw. He broke away again. His fingertips went to his face and came back wet. By now the fire had spread, the wallpaper running with flame. The heat was rising and the ceiling timbers fumed and glowed. Blood trickled over Aaron's collarbone, and his head was becoming light. Smoke seeped into his lungs and he coughed hard.
"It's not going how you imagined, is it?" Hart sneered. "You thought that feeling of righteous vengeance would be enough to guarantee victory. Do you think the world owes you justice? Ask the women and children, crushed and maimed and burning right now, if your resistance is worth it. Most of the servants here are Ossian, you know. You call me a murderer, but I've not killed one-tenth the number you have. And my victims, unlike yours, were all guilty of something."
Doubt crept into Aaron's heart as he understood the cost of what he'd committed to. Destruction was always Garrick's plan, never Aaron's. But Aaron had broken him out, freed him to complete his task. He bore the responsibility for that. But there was no retreat now. No route back to the boy he was before this all began. It was far too late for all of that. So he squared himself, aimed his sword, and took his stance.
"To the end," he said.
"As you like," said Hart, and struck. Back and forth they went, swords blurring. Aaron had sobered a little now, and he'd gained proper respect for his opponent's skill. He tried to force himself to be calm, to study his adversary. "To overcome your enemy, you must first understand him." But his thoughts were awhirl, and he hated too much. He saw nothing but that Hart's injured ankle was hampering his footwork. If not for that, Aaron would likely have been dead already. But Hart was impatient and distracted, too. The heat was becoming difficult to bear, and it was hard not to cough in the gathering smoke. The fire was moving to cut off their exit. Timbers were bulging and splitting overhead, and though Aaron couldn't win, still he wouldn't give way. Hart's attacks became more purposeful, more risky. He needed to finish Aaron off. "You're getting careless," Aaron thought. But that moment of confidence made him careless himself, and he mistimed his thrust. Hart twisted his wrist and knocked Aaron's blade from his hand. With a quick movement, he brought his own sword back across and drove the pommel into Aaron's temple. Aaron fell, stunned, a blinding pain in his skull. Hart stood over him, shoulders heaving, sword pointing at Aaron's chest.
"So," he said, "that's that. You did know your father was a traitor to his people, didn't you? That he sold your country out for his wealth? I hope he was worth dying for."
There was a sudden crack from above. Hart looked up in alarm, and Aaron drove a vicious heel into the watchman's injured ankle. Hart bellowed in pain and collapsed to one knee, clutching his leg. Aaron planted his other foot in Hart's chest and shoved him away with all the force he could muster. Hart staggered across the room, his leg folded under him, and he fell onto his back. Aaron scrambled over to his sword, snatched it up, and jumped to his feet. Hart, a short way from him, was struggling to rise. Aaron headed towards him, lured by the red temptation of vengeance, but stopped as he heard a groan from the ceiling, and it began to bulge downwards. There were mere moments left before it caved in, but maybe moments would be enough to do what had to be done. And if they were both buried in flames, so what? Wasn't that a better end than facing what waited on the other side of his rage? The only desire he had left was to plunge his blade into the breast of the man who killed his father. But Garrick had taken that path, and Cade had died for it. Aaron owed it to his friend to make that mean something. With a savage effort of will, he tore himself away from his helpless enemy and the satisfaction he felt he deserved. He'd take the harder road and live. The groan of the timbers overhead reached a crescendo as he ran through the closing flames towards the exit. He heard Hart's rising scream as he dived through the doorway, and then the ceiling gave way, and the watchman was silenced in an avalanche of rock and blazing wood. Aaron lay gasping in the corridor outside, his mind blank with shock. Now that it was over, it felt like madness had taken him for a time. A few more moments, and that hall would have been his tomb. In avenging his father, he'd have joined him. But he'd chosen otherwise. He chose to carry on. He pulled himself to his feet and looked back through the doorway. From beneath the pile of rubble, a black-clad arm protruded, a hand lying limp and bloody at the end of it. "He was a traitor," Aaron said quietly, "but he was still my father, and I loved him." It wasn't much of an epitaph, but it was what he had. Eyes tearing from more than the smoke, he sheathed his sword and set off after his friends. From somewhere in the depths of the burning fortress came a thin, inhuman shriek, the voice of sorrow chasing him towards the dark. 105. Fenn stood against the railing, thin hands gripped tight round the cold metal, and stared fearfully into the shaft below. A cage lift waited at the top, suspended by a winch, with gatefold doors on two sides. A vertical metal track ran down the wall into the depths. There was a substantial gap between the lift cage and the shaft's far wall, which had been ribbed with timbers. Beyond the range of the lantern light, Fenn could see nothing. It might have been 30 feet to the bottom, or 30,000. Grubb chuckled by her ear.
"Long way down,"
he said, enjoying her discomfort. It had been a long way down for Cade, too.
"Don't lean on anyone or anything, Fenn. Not no place or person. Elsewise, when they fall, you'll fall with them."
She shut her eyes. It didn't stop her seeing it.
"Where is he?" Mara hissed.
She was standing by the door to the cellar, looking out into the corridor. The others waited anxiously among the mess of the excavation. Rubble, stacked pickaxes, lanterns and oil. Some of the lanterns had been put to use, their light reflecting from the damp bricks of the barrel vault ceiling. Grubb brandished the ember blade, still in its scabbard.
"Grubb not worried. Grubb ruler of all Ossia."
Vika surged towards him, staff clicking on the stone, and snatched it from his hand.
"Show some respect," she snapped, and shook the sword at him. "This is not for you."
Grubb glowered, and Fenn saw real anger in his eyes then, a glimmer of pure malice, quickly cloaked. He gave Vika a wide smile, as if it had all been a big joke.
"Grubb just keeping spirits up," he said lightly.
But it would take more than that to lift the gloom over them. Even Ruck whined uneasily and didn't seem herself. Cade had been liked by everyone, and he was gone. Fenn hadn't been attached to Osman, she hadn't let herself get close, but Cade was her friend. Had been. She couldn't stop seeing him fall.
"No, he didn't fall. He let go, just like Da."
Garrick was gone too, and though he wasn't so pleasant or kind, he'd loomed large in all their lives. They'd suspected that the explosion was his doing, and Mara confirmed it when they found her. She'd made her way to the cellar before the chaos began, reckoning it the safest place to be when the Iron Hand started searching for her. She'd revealed that she knew of Garrick's true plan when they rescued him,
but she'd never believe he would be mad enough to still attempt it. Halfway through, Fenn realized she wasn't giving an explanation, but a confession.
"There are children here," Mara had said, her voice going thin. "Danric was here, though it's my hope he left in time. I just didn't think..."
No one was in the mood to judge her, and she lapsed into a prickly silence. Fenn's only concern was Aaron, who'd taken a bewildering detour before anyone could stop him. She wouldn't dare to guess at his state of mind.
"Come back. I can't lose you too."
Hammerholt shuddered and grumbled overhead, loud enough to make Fenn tense her shoulders. Dust sifted down from the ceiling, and she saw cracks spreading in the bricks.
"We must go," said Mara.
"Not yet. He will be here,"
said Fenn, her voice dull and flat.
"Or the guards will, or this fortress will come down on our heads."
"No guards will come while Hammerholt burns," said Harrod. "Not even the Crodans are so fanatical as to seek us out now." From somewhere above them, they heard an anguished shriek. Orica hugged herself at the sound.
"There are other things than guards abroad tonight," said Mara.
"Grub knows that sound," said Grub, his tattooed brow creasing in puzzlement. "From the mountains round Solar's Bluff."
"It is the sound of sorrow," said Vika. "He comes for us."
Mara held up a hand, listening.
"I hear footsteps."
"Aaron!"
Fenn breathed, for the hooded Dreadknight made no such sound. She hurried to the doorway in time to see him approaching down the corridor. His chin and neck were smeared with blood, and there was a huge bruise developing next to his eye, but he was alive. Swept up in a flood of relief, she moved to embrace him, but something in his grim manner made her hesitate, and the moment was lost.
"About time Mudslug got here," Grub called.
"Where have you been?" Mara demanded.
"Mara, you're safe,"
Aaron said, dismissing her question with a brusque air of command. "Where is the Ember Blade?"
"I have it," said Vika, walking over. "And now you shall have it. You are its keeper, at least for now."
Aaron met her gaze gravely. He took the sword and strapped it to his belt, while Grub watched with weasel's eyes.
"Hold still," said Vika. "That cut will keep bleeding until it is salved."
She took out a small pot from inside her cloak and smeared a paste on his chin. He endured it impatiently and shook her off when she was done.
"Sorrow has our trail. We shouldn't delay. Vika, can you stand against the Dreadknight if he comes?"
"I cannot," she said bitterly. "I do not have the strength."
"Then you go down first. Mara as well. How many more can it fit?"
"Grub staying with Mudslug," Grub announced.
"Harrod and Orica, you too," said Aaron. "You might need Harrod's blade down there. You have the lanterns? Go."
They crowded into the lift with Ruck. It seemed sturdy, supported by thick ropes from above, and fixed to the vertical track on one side of the shaft by metal wheels. Fenn still didn't like the look of it. She hated to be confined, and her first instinct was mistrust. The thought of climbing into a tiny cage hanging over an unknowable drop made her sick with fear. At the top of the shaft was a winch and a brake, and there was another inside the lift. Aaron and Grub set to work and managed to get it turning. Ropes squeaked through pulleys, and the lift began to descend, rolling down the track. Fenn stood at the railing and watched the anxious faces of those inside disappear from sight. The light of their lanterns illuminated the sides of the shaft as they were lowered. It occurred to Fenn that she could climb down the shaft by using the timber planks as a ladder, for they were set close and would offer good hand and footholds. But that felt scarcely less terrifying than the lift, and a great deal slower.
"You will get in that cage," she told herself sternly. "You have to, or Aaron will not."
It was that thought, rather than any of safety, that gave her heart. He'd be there beside her, just like he was in Skavengard. Somber as he was now, she took strength from his company. The rope slackened, and they heard a cry from below.
"We're down," Mara called.
"How far?" Aaron shouted back. 90 feet, no more.
"Shades, you must see this," Vika yelled up to them, her voice full of wonder. She didn't go so far as to tell them what she'd seen.
"We're out. Bring it up," Mara called.
"Send it down, bring it up, send it down, bring it up," Grubb carped as they reversed the direction of the winch and started hauling.
In the distance there was a grinding noise which grew to a rumbling avalanche. It shook the walls hard enough that they stopped winching and covered their heads, fearful of the roof caving in. But though bricks fell from the ceiling and new cracks grew, the cellar held and the sound faded.
"Reckon that was the whole tower coming down," Aaron said as he straightened.
He'd just set his hand back on the winch when they heard Sorrow shriek again. He was closer now.
"He won't stop, will he?" said Fen, remembering the pursuit through the mountains. "He doesn't rest. Once he has our trail, he'll keep coming."
Aaron said nothing and turned the winch. At last, the lift rattled into place at the top of the shaft, and Grubb put the brake on.
"It's time," Aaron said to Fen.
She walked around to the door, hesitated a moment, then stepped inside. It was easier than she thought. Fear of the Dreadnought on their heels was a powerful motivator. Aaron told her to put on the brake in the lift, and then he released the one at the top of the shaft. The small lurch, as the weight shifted, made Fen swallow hard.
"All you have to do is stand still," she told herself. "You can do that."
Grubb and Aaron crowded in with her, and Aaron pulled the gatefold door shut behind him. Fen closed her eyes and concentrated on breathing steadily. Grubb's sour smell was hard to bear this close up.
"Ah, Freckles doesn't like heights," Grubb said.
Fen couldn't manage a retort. She just wanted this to be over.
"Down we go," said Aaron.
He released the brake and began turning the winch inside the lift. Their descent was painfully slow. The toothed wheels of the lift squealed like restless mice as the cellar dwindled to a lit square overhead and the stone closed in around them. Fen pressed against the side of the lift and tried to forget there was only a half inch of metal between her and the drop into the dark beneath.
"All you have to do is stand still."
There was a loud boom from overhead and a shiver passed through the rock. Fen's eyes flew open and she clutched the bars of the cage as the distant rumbling grew louder, closer, louder still. In moments, the whole lift was shaking, and she had to bite her lip to keep from whimpering.
"Please let it stop, please let it stop, please let it stop."
But Meshuk, the stone mother, was in no mood to listen to pleas. Pebbles and then stones bounced off the roof of the lift as the frame rattled and timbers creaked. There was a crash of masonry, a shriek of bending metal, then the lift was struck hard from above, making Fen scream in terror. She held fast to the sides of the cage, fingers wound through the metal bars, as a chunk of stone bounced past them and plunged down the shaft. Finally, it was over, and there was quiet again, but for the plangent groan of stressed metal coming from all around them.
"Aaron? Fen? Are you hurt?"
Mara shouted from the bottom of the shaft.
"Yes, Grubb is well too, thank you for asking,"
Grubb yelled back. Aaron put his hand on Fen's arm. She opened her eyes, found him gazing at her with concern on his face.
"Get us down," she said. "Just get us down."
Aaron nodded. He put his hand to the winch and tried to turn it, but found that it wouldn't move. He tried again, harder.
"Let Grubb try,"
said the Skull, muscling him aside. He strained at the handle for a moment, then stood back and harrumphed.
"Stuck," he declared.
"The winch must be damaged," Aaron said, looking through the roof of the lift.
He peered down the shaft.
"I can see the lanterns at the bottom. It's not more than 40 feet. We can climb it."
Fen shook her head. She didn't want to move. If she moved, she'd fall.
"It's easy. Grubb go first," Grubb said.
Fen winced as Grubb clattered over to the other side of the lift and pulled the gatefold door open. Beyond, there was a gap of about 8 feet to the far wall, where the timber planks formed a makeshift ladder. Grubb launched himself without hesitation, springing through the air to catch the other side.
He looked over his shoulder at them. "See?" he said, and climbed down the shaft as if it were nothing at all. Another shiver ran through the earth, the death throes of the fortress above. It had been cored by Garrick's bloody farewell, and now it was collapsing in on itself. Aaron glanced up, worried.
"We can't stay here," he told her.
"I can't do it."
"You can. You can do it. It's a short jump and a simple climb. I bet you used to climb mountains that made this look like nothing."
"I'll fall," she said, and hated herself for saying it, hated the way her voice sounded.
"I'll make sure you don't. I'll..."
The lift tipped forward, its top edge coming away from the wall with a screech. Fenn clung to the bars, but Aaron went stumbling sideways towards the open door of the cage. She screamed his name as she saw him lose his balance, but then, at the last moment, he half-turned, planted his foot, and jumped out into the shaft. It was clumsy, but luck was with him. His hands snagged a timber plank, and he crashed against the wall and hung there, panting. Once he'd caught his breath, he found a foothold and checked that the ember blade was still safe at his hip. That done, he looked back at Fenn, who was still pressed against the side of the cage, breath short with panic.
"Jump," he told her.
There was a slow shriek of warping steel, and the lift gently bowed forward, tipping her towards the open door.
"I'll fall,"
she cried, and though she wanted desperately to move, she couldn't. She was locked in place, already falling in her mind as she fell in her dreams, her dad's hand opening and pitching her out into empty air.
"You won't. I'll catch you."
"You'll let me go," she accused.
"I won't let you go, Fenn. I promise."
His voice was calm, strong as iron, and she believed him entirely. Cade had let go, but Aaron never would, no matter what. "Move, jump, move."
"Trust me," he said.
Something snapped overhead, and the lift lurched. The rope began thumping and slithering in coils onto the roof of the cage.
"Look out below!" Aaron barked. "Fenn, now!"
The new note of fear gave her the spur she needed. She ran two steps forward and launched herself out into the air an instant before the arm of the crane smashed down into the cage with terrifying force, and both plunged away, taking their lantern with it. Fenn flew through the sudden dark, caught in an instant of perfect terror. She hit the timber's shoulder first, missing her catch, and bounced off with a scream. But a hand clamped onto her wrist, and before she could fall she was jerked back up, hard enough that her arm almost came out of its socket. Aaron held her, dangling, his other arm anchored around the timbers.
"I've got you,"
he said through gritted teeth. She seized the edge of a plank, pulled herself to the wall and got a foothold. When she was safe, he released her wrist, and she pressed against the wood, feeling its roughness on her cheek, breathing in the dank scent of it.
"Fenn? Aaron?"
Orica's worried voice floated up the shaft.
"We're all right,"
Aaron called. He looked down at Fenn, his eyes shining in the faint light from above and below.
"We're all right?"
he asked her softly.
"We're all right," she agreed.
Then, to her surprise, she smiled at him. It was a smile of relief and gratitude and something more than that. Some strange and foreign feeling which she didn't recognize and wouldn't admit. Her own reaction perturbed her, so she looked away and began to climb down. For some reason, the drop didn't seem quite so terrible now. 106. The base of the shaft was a mess of bent metal and rope, the remains of the crane arm and the crushed lift. Harrod had climbed the heap and was waiting there to guide them through the tangle to safe ground. They climbed down into a small square chamber, damp and cold with long, empty centuries, half of it buried under debris from the shaft. The others were gathered near a stone doorway, anxious faces softening in relief as they saw that Aaron and Fenn were unhurt. Something about the sight of them, clustered in the lantern light, gave Aaron a pang. All the people that knew him, all those who cared, were right here. After losing Cade and almost losing Fenn,
They felt unutterably precious. Here was the sum total of his world now. Without them, he had nothing.
"Aaron, Fen," said Vika, beckoning. "You should see this."
They followed her through the doorway, and the others trailed in after. Vika held up a lantern, and the light swelled, but still it didn't fill the great hall they found themselves in, only just enough to illuminate the face of the monster. The sight of it, emerging suddenly from the gloom, made Aaron step back. An enormous statue towered over them, a seated figure on a throne of bone and tusk, its leering face horrifying to behold. A fat tongue lolled greedily over blade-like teeth, and its three eyes were bulbous and crazed, the largest in the centre of its forehead. It wore a necklace of ears, and its clawed hands rested on two dragon skulls. The whole of it exuded a primal, carnal savagery, a lewd animal lust for meat and slaughter.
"Ganachtavar," said Mara, her voice echoing in the hollow hall. "Chieftain of the Erdish Pantheon. For many long centuries he has waited here in the dark."
As they stood there, unsettled by the presence of an abandoned god, Aaron felt a new understanding come over him. Once, the people who'd built this statue had been masters of Embria, makers of wonders. Their gods had ruled, and their ways were the ways of the land. They told their own stories in their language, and humans were savage, uneducated slaves only fit for servitude. All his life he'd been taught that the Erds were mindless primitives, vermin to be exterminated in the purges. Yet this wasn't the work of the mindless. How had the Erds felt when plague had taken so many of them? Did they grieve as humans did? Did they weep when their children were slain by the ignorant masses that rose up behind Jessa Wolf's heart? He knew that story as a triumph, but an Erd would speak of tragedy, betrayal, and an upturning of the natural order. What would his own tale be if a Crodan told it then? One of theft, regicide, and indiscriminate slaughter? An underhand plot to destroy the decency and order the Crodans had built in this backward land? The ungrateful act of malcontents who held to blasphemous gods and didn't know their place? Right and wrong were just a matter of perspective. Stories and histories changed, depending on the teller. Justice was an illusion. All that mattered was what you believed. His hand went to the ember blade at his hip. "I believe in this," he thought to himself. It was a solemn dedication, made with every fibre of his being. He believed in the ember blade, and his friends, and the rebellion he hoped would come. He believed with angry passion, and he knew now why Garrick's quest had consumed him. Like Aaron, Garrick had needed one absolute to cling to, a cause to make all the loss mean something. Otherwise, all their suffering was just chance and chaos, the random thrashings of an uncaring, godless existence. And he couldn't accept that. He wouldn't. From somewhere above, they heard sorrow howl. "Let us make haste," said Aaron. "We have no maps now. We'll have to find our own way out."
"Lake is that way," said Grubb, pointing. "Maybe we get back into caves we came in by. Maybe find some other way out."
Mara made a noise of agreement. Grubb had an uncanny sense of direction underground, and his logic was sound. "Water makes its own openings, even through rock. We are much more likely to find an exit near a lake than by heading further into the mountain."
"Water makes openings. That's what Grubb meant," said Grubb,
though it was evident he didn't know what she was talking about.
"Have a care, though," Mara said to them all. "When the Erds were driven east, they left many traps and tricks behind for their enemies. Even now the Delvers fear what lies in wait in the ruins. The Erds were the greatest engineers of their day, and their craft has stood the test of time."
"Ha! Grubb not afraid of stupid Erds. He will go first because he is the bravest. Follow Grubb."
He took up a lantern and lumbered off across the hall, the others following in his wake.
They made their way through the cold, silent hollows of the Underkeep, a world built by people whose thoughts moved by different tides. Every edge looked jagged or sharp. Horrible faces, violently angular, lunged from the darkness. Strange creatures sprawled across lintels and down square pillars. Everything the Erds fashioned was a display of power and intimidation, and to Ossianize it was unbearably harsh. Yet to an Erd there must have been comfort here, just as Crodans took comfort in their piously austere houses and the rigid order of their society. But that is not my world, Aaron thought, no more than this is. The Underkeep was a maze of tunnels and halls, interconnected chambers linked by stairways and passages. They found complex junctions set over many levels, with multiple exits hidden among a knot of steps. There were rooms of all shapes and sizes, some with obvious purpose and some entirely mysterious. Empty of life, it was a sarcophagus for a vanished empire. They passed through circular rooms with deep pits in the centre, and later crossed a square arena surrounded by stone tiers that might once have been benches. Aaron wondered whether battles had been fought here, or if it was in fact a theatre or a forum. Then the walls closed in again, and they were hurrying through narrow corridors once more, glancing over their shoulders as they went. The dark ahead and behind was oppressive, and though they hadn't heard Sorrow for some time now, they couldn't shake the sense that they were being hunted. It was there, in the tight confines of the corridors, that they sprung the trap. Aaron, following just behind Grubb, was the one who triggered it. A slab shifted beneath his foot, dropping an inch with a loud click and causing him to stumble. Grubb went rigid at the sound, then suddenly darted forward. With a thunderous screech, two metal barriers sprang from recesses in the walls, slamming across the corridor in front and behind them. The rest were taken completely by surprise, but Grubb, quick as a cat, slipped through the gap a moment before the barrier cut them off. Seven of them were left on one side, Grubb on the other. The barriers were solid slabs of metal, carved with leering faces and symbols of death in the ugly alphabet of the Erds. Ruck barked angrily at the faces as the shock wore off, and they took stock. The barrier in front of them wasn't quite closed. It had shunted a piece of rubble before it, and was now held a hand's width from the wall by a trembling chunk of stone. "Grubb?" Aaron called. Grubb's eye appeared in the gap, a lantern held up above it. The barrier was still straining to close, driven by some great force from behind. The rock quivered and shifted, threatening to crack at any moment. "Can you find a lever?" he asked Grubb. "Something to jam this open." Grubb looked him over, and there was something calculating in his gaze which Aaron didn't like. He grunted and disappeared, and Aaron heard him moving around in the corridor. The rest of them watched one another, packed close in the small space between the barriers, each hoping that someone else had a solution. "If that barrier closes," Orica began. "We'll be trapped here, yes," Mara said tersely, "and our lanterns will go out and we'll starve in the dark. We're all quite aware of that." "Vika, your staff?" Aaron suggested. "You can fit it in the gap." "It would shatter," Vika said. "Do you have a potion? Can you do anything?" "If I could, I would be doing it."
"Nothing out here," Grubb called from the other side.
"Is there any kind of mechanism?" Mara said. "These barriers did not move by sorcery. There must be some way to retract them."
"Grubb will look."
There was a click behind the wall where the barriers had sprung from, and a rough grinding noise began, frighteningly loud in the silence.
"Grubb?" Aaron said. "Did you—" "Grubb didn't touch anything," came the irritated reply.
"Well, something happened."
"The wall is moving," Harrod said.
And so it was, narrowing the corridor inch by inch, moving to crush them. "Grubb!" Fenn cried, as she put her shoulder to the wall in a futile attempt to slow its progress. Harrod joined her, and Orica too, while Ruck ran in tight circles, barking in distress.
"Wait! Something here!" said Grubb.
"We don't have time to wait!" Aaron yelled through the gap.
There was a crash of breaking stone on the other side of the barrier. Grub found it.
Found what? Aaron cried in frustration.
The wall was pushing them together now, gathering them up before it. Aaron couldn't help imagining the steady, relentless squeeze before the end, the cracking of ribs and bones, the pressure on his trapped skull building and building until...
Grub!
He yelled again.
What is it?
Grub doesn't know, Grub shouted back in exasperation. Behind slab in wall, moving things, spinning things, no lever, no switch.
Do something!
Fenn shouted, her heels skidding on the stone floor as she was forced backwards.
Do it now or we're going to die!
Grub's eye appeared in the gap again.
Ember blade, he said to Aaron. Give ember blade to Grub.
Don't, said Vika. He desires it. I hear it in his voice. Long have I suspected, but when I saw him with it, I knew. He means to take it. He has meant to take it all along.
Grub's eye darkened in anger.
No time for this, painted lady. Give.
Save us first, Vika demanded, or the ember blade will be lost to you forever.
Grub ignored her, his gaze fixed on Aaron. The rock holding the gap open cracked under pressure from the barrier, and a chunk of it skittered away. What remained would only hold for a few instants more.
Mudslug, said Grub, his voice hard. Give ember blade. Last chance.
Aaron pulled it from his belt, scabbard and all, and thrust it through the gap. Grub snatched it and yanked it the rest of the way out. A moment later the rock exploded in a shower of powder, and the barrier slammed shut, cutting them off entirely. Aaron had a horrible feeling that he might have just made a terrible mistake, but it was done now and couldn't be undone. The wall had closed off half the corridor, and there was hardly space to move as they were jammed up against one another. He smelled sweat and sewer water, and heard the frightened breath of his friends. Wild, wide eyes darted desperately, searching for salvation. The wall kept coming, oblivious to prayers or wishes. They began to whimper and gasp as the space between them closed. The crush would worsen, tighter and tighter. Unimaginable pain was coming, and they were helpless to prevent it. Aaron fought to keep the scream inside him, but he wasn't sure how long he could.
Grub! Help us!
Orica cried. He has his prize, Vika said bitterly. He has already fled. Skarls have no conscience when it comes to foreigners.
No, said Aaron through gritted teeth. He's out there. He's trying. I know him.
But the wall came grinding onwards, and now they were so tightly packed they could no longer move. Fenn was pressed up against him, Vika on the other side, Ruck whining somewhere near his feet. Still the pressure increased. Aaron shut his eyes and braced himself as best he could for the agony to come, but the mere thought of it turned his bowels to water.
No, no, please. Meshuk, Johar, Primus, anybody, no.
There was a shriek of metal from behind the wall and a clunk, clunk, clunk from some thwarted mechanism. The grinding fell quiet. They waited, squeezed together, their faces inches from each other's, underlit ghoulishly by the lantern resting on the floor. None of them dared to breathe.
The wall has stopped, Orica whispered.
She let out a little chuckle that was halfway to a sob.
It stopped.
Metal squealed, and the barrier between them and Grub drew back a fraction. Fingers appeared in the gap, and it was hauled open further until it was wide enough to squeeze through. The skull's tattooed face appeared on the other side.
Not squashed?
He asked in faint surprise. They crowded past him, spilling out into the corridor beyond, gasping and panting in relief.
Yes, thank you, Grub,
Grub griped sarcastically as they caught their breath.
Thank you for saving our...
He was cut short as Aaron hugged him, and then Fenn too, and he was showered with pats on the back and exclamations of gratitude. Even Ruck barked and slobbered on his hand. By the end of it, Grub was equal parts pleased and embarrassed.
Well then, he said, blushing, that a bit better.
How did you stop the wall?
Orica asked.
Grub pointed, and Aaron blanched as he saw what the skull had done. There was a square hole in the wall of the corridor, and a broken slab of stone on the floor where it had been pulled away. Beyond were toothed cogs, metal bars and counterweights like the workings of some ancient and enormous clock. The ember blade's elegant scabbard lay on the floor, while the sword itself had been jammed between the teeth of two large cogs. Aaron gaped.
That's the ember blade? He managed.
Mudslug rather be paced? Grub asked. Dumbface said it was indestructible.
It's supposed to be.
Shouldn't say things if they're not true, Grub sniffed. Let's see.
He walked over, took hold of the hilt, and yanked the ember blade free. Unblocked, the cogs came to life again, and there was a heavy boom as one wall met the other. Aaron cringed. Grub held up the ember blade and inspected it.
Not a scratch, he said, and sheathed it in its scabbard. Dumbface was right.
Then he held out the sword to Aaron and snorted back a nostril full of snot.
Here, he said with a pointed gaze at Vika. This not for Grub.
Aaron took it. Thank you, he said earnestly, for more than just this. Vika stepped up beside him, shamefaced behind her smeared mask. I apologize, Grub. I wronged you, she said.
No, you didn't, he replied breezily.
You mean you were going to steal it? Aaron asked. Grub nodded.
Grub made the choice tonight, he said. Grub could have taken Ember Blade, gone home, made himself legend. Maybe somber men judge him good then. Maybe skin scribes take away this.
He motioned to the black swipe across his eyes, the sign of the exile.
Grub canna coot no more. Bone God welcome him then.
But you chose otherwise, Harrod said. They were all listening now.
Yes, because being thief not enough, leaving friends to die not enough, Ember Blade not enough.
He poked a finger at Aaron's chest.
You start something here, something bigger than stealing some stupid sword. Your people going to throw off Crodans, going to fight an impossible fight and win. Know why? Because you have Grub with you. And when skalds tell of Grub 1,000 years from now, when people read what the stone singers write 100 feet high, they not read about the thief who stole a sword. They read about a hero, like Jessa Wolfsheart, first skald they ever built a statue of in Ossia. Grub don't just want to be famous in Skaratun. He want to be famous everywhere.
He thought for a moment.
Except maybe Croda, he added. His chances there not good.
He shook his head, dismissing the thought.
Anyway, you got Ember Blade now. Do something with it.
Aaron was half awed and half intimidated by the responsibility.
That's a heavy weight to put on my shoulders, he said.
You trusted Grub. Grub trusts you. Don't let Grub down.
I won't, said Aaron. Then more firmly. I won't.
Grub harrumphed and fidgeted, suddenly awkward. Grub sorry about Dumbface, he said. Going to miss him.
The unexpected sympathy brought tears to Aaron's eyes.
Me too, he said quietly.
Grub took up the lantern and looked around at the others.
You lot all right as well, he told them. For foreigners, anyway. Just watch your step next time. Grub likes you better when you're not crushed to bloody ooze.
With that, he strode off down the corridor, his lantern swinging at his side. Fenn and Aaron exchanged a glance, then Fenn shrugged and followed him. 107. There was vengeance in Sorrow's cries. Aaron could hear it. Somehow he'd sensed Plague's death. Until now, the Dreadknights had kept up some semblance of humanity, but that was all over. They were servants of the Outsiders, and his angry, haunting screams were the voice of the Abyss. They went deeper into the Underkeep, maintaining a punishing pace despite the threat of more traps.
Sorrow sounded like he was almost on top of them, but they could only keep moving and hope. They didn't have the strength to stand against him. Vika was their only weapon, and she was spent. The darkness bore down on them as they hurried through abandoned chambers, their lanterns lonely flickers of light. They headed towards the lake, following Grub's lead, but they kept hitting dead ends and were forced to backtrack many times. Stairs took them up and down, tunnels split and split again, and the more detours they took, the more Aaron began to despair of ever finding an escape. All the time, sorrow drew closer. Eventually, they emerged from the maze of tunnels and halls and found themselves on an ancient bridge over a breathtaking chasm that extended far beyond the limits of their lanterns. At the edge of the light, they could dimly see other bridges crossing theirs, both overhead and below, some straddled by squat, silent gatehouses with empty black windows. There were other buildings along the side of the gorge, angular dwellings descending into the dark. A great stone promontory held up a huge structure that had the look of a temple, but which was more intimidating and awesome in its setting than any sanctorum building Aaron had ever seen. "How far do these tunnels spread?" Mara exclaimed. "We must have left Hammerholt far behind by now." The Knights Valiant of Mitterland spoke of finding underground cities during the purges of the lowlands, said Harrod. "It is thought that they are pale shadows of those built across Ossia when the First Empire was in its pomp." The bridge ended at a gaping portal leading to another cave, where they found a bewildering tangle of steps and platforms spreading out before them. There were half a dozen exits they could see, and probably more they couldn't. Aaron's heart sank a little. "Which way?" he asked. Even Grubb's confidence waned, faced with so many options. He surveyed the scene helplessly, trying to guess the route onwards. Then Ruck barked, and Vika stepped forward and laid a hand on her back. "That way," she said, pointing to a doorway high above them with her staff. "How can you tell?" asked Orica, her green eyes shining bright in the gloom. "Ruck can hear nightbirds calling on the lake."
"Fleabag tell you that, did she?"
Grub asked, eyeing Ruck suspiciously. Ruck growled at him.
"In a way," said Vika, and offered no further explanation.
Aaron was in no mood to turn down any offer of hope.
"Lead on, then," he told Ruck, who loped off ahead.
They followed her, Grub grumbling under his breath about the indignity of being replaced by a hound. The prospect of escape spurred them to new speed. Though they were tired and footsore, they pushed past gruesome carvings, through grim halls thick with shadow, and chambers full of pillars and pits. The scowling craft of the Erds oppressed them, and with every step they feared to trigger some new trap, but whether by luck or divine favour, they made their way unhindered. At last they emerged through a doorway into another cavern. Before them was a gorge spanned by a narrow bridge. They could hear running water somewhere below. At the far end of the bridge, rough steps zigzagged upwards, ending in...
"Light!" Orica cried.
And it was. The cool glow of the moons, knifing through some unseen gap at the top of the stairs. Ruck barked joyfully and went running ahead, Vika running with her.
"Wait for Grub," said Grub, bounding after them onto the bridge.
Aaron was no less eager, chasing the others towards the moonlight. He knew haste was foolish, but he couldn't help himself. It was only when he was somewhere across that he remembered Fen's fear of heights and stopped to check she was coming. To his surprise, she was right behind him. The bridge wasn't wide, but it was wide enough that she was in no danger of falling, and there were crumbling parapets to either side. Her face was alight, and the sight of it warmed him, a small comfort in the vast numb waste left by Cade's death. He looked past her to the others. Mara was close on Fen's heels, then Harrod, with Orica just behind him. And behind her, swirling like ink from the dark mouth of the doorway, a shadow in a black cloak, his metal face frozen in an anguished howl.
"Look out!"
he screamed, but already he knew that no warning would be enough.
The Dread Knight lunged from the doorway. Orica's eyes went wide as she was enfolded from behind. A blade flashed in the blackness and plunged. Time slowed to a crawl. Orica went stiff, caught inside that tangle of darkness, her gaze drifting far away to something they couldn't see. Sorrow drew back his blade and released her, and she crumpled in a heap on the ground. Harrod stood at the end of the bridge, frozen in place. He'd turned in time to see Orica stabbed, but too late to intervene. Now he quivered like a plucked string, his eyes filling with horror, his Harrish composure peeling away before the heat of his emotion. Sorrow raised his paired swords, the short blade and the long, and took his stance. His first strike had been murder. Now he meant to do battle. A scream of rage and grief ripped from Harrod's throat. He drew his sword and charged, and Sorrow ran to meet him. They met in a storm of blades, a flurry of strikes almost too fast for the eye to see. Sorrow's swords were everywhere, and at first Harrod was equal to it. Though he wasn't so inhumanly quick, he anticipated every blow and was ready when it came. Back and forth they went, but Sorrow's speed gave him the edge in the end, and Harrod was driven steadily onto the bridge and further from his fallen love. Shock had stayed Aaron's hand at first, but now he drew his sword, intending to run to Harrod's aid. Fen grabbed his arm before he could.
"Don't," she told him. "You can't win."
It was truth, and he knew it. He couldn't even beat Hart in a straight fight. Walking into that whirlwind would be suicide. But he couldn't stand by and do nothing. It wasn't in him to do that.
"Come on, Mudslug." Grub was back with them now, tugging him towards the stairs. "Ballhead buying us time."
Aaron shook him off.
"Vika, help him."
"I want to,"
said the druidess, her painted face tortured in the lantern light.
"I can't."
"Fen has no arrows," Mara said. "Only you and Grub can help, and the bridge is not broad enough for you both."
"And Grub isn't stupid. He not fighting that."
"We must save the Ember Blade," Mara urged. "Out in the open, maybe we can escape him."
Aaron watched the battle raging on the bridge and knew that Harrod couldn't win it. The Dread Knight was tireless, and Harrod wasn't. He'd be worn down and killed eventually, and if they were still here when that happened, they'd be killed too. But he was one of them, and that meant more than any sword did.
"Wherever we go, Sora will find us," Aaron told them. "We stand united, or we fall apart."
So saying, he ran into the fray. It took all of his courage to cross swords with the Dread Knight. It was a thing of shadow, the only bright points its witch-iron blades and twisted mask. Terror surrounded it like a mantle. Yet for all his fear, Aaron moved alongside Harrod and took his place in the fight. They'd both lost someone they loved today, and there was brotherhood in that. Aaron wouldn't lose Harrod too. He expected to be outclassed, and fought accordingly. He wasn't there to kill the Dread Knight, but to divide his attention. If he could defend himself a while, he might give Harrod the chance he needed. But even that was almost beyond him. The Dread Knight's blows came so fast that he was barely able to fend them away. Were it not for the fact that the Dread Knight was focusing on Harrod, clearly the more dangerous opponent, Aaron would have been cut down like wheat. "To overcome your enemy, you must first understand him." But how could he possibly understand what lay beneath Sorrow's mask? Harrod let out a high, raw scream that sounded wrong coming from a man who'd once seemed a stranger to emotion. Yet even taken by purest fury, he was in control. Still, he didn't overreach. Still, he kept his straight-backed stance while his blade flickered here and there. Perhaps Sorrow had hoped to unbalance him by attacking Orica first, but Harrod was too skilled a swordsman for that. Hard and quick they fought, by the light of the moons and their lanterns. Aaron wasn't aware of what the others on the bridge were doing, if they'd fled or not, and he had no space to care. All his focus was on this battle, every fibre of his being dedicated to the fight. It wasn't enough. Sorrow's blade whipped out, and as Aaron pulled his head out of reach, his leg was kicked from under him.
He fell backwards and crashed against the parapet, which broke beneath his weight, ancient stone giving way to pitch him into the black gorge. Harrod grabbed him by the scruff of his jerkin, lightning quick, and hauled him away from the edge. Instead of falling over the side, he tumbled onto the floor of the bridge. But that distraction was what Sorrow had been counting on. The instant Harrod took his eye from his opponent, Sorrow hooked his short sword around Harrod's weapon. There was an instant of struggle, then both blades went spinning into the void. Harrod stepped back from his opponent, weaponless now, without armor. Sorrow drew himself up to his full height, his long blade hanging from his gloved hand, that anguished face gaping, a snake about to strike.
"Harrod!"
Aaron cried. Harrod whirled in time to catch the sword Aaron flung towards him. Sorrow lunged in the same moment, thrusting for the kill, but Harrod spun back to face him, the sword singing free from its scabbard as he turned. And it wasn't Aaron's sword he held, but the ember blade, a streak of sullen fire in the dark, which smashed the Dreadknight's blade to shards. Sorrow stared in surprise at the sundered weapon in his hands, and in that moment of hesitation, Harrod swung again. The Dreadknight gave an unearthly shriek as the ember blade clove into him, the force of it sending his body over the parapet. Still shrieking, he tumbled raggedly into the gorge and kept falling till they could hear him no more.
"Orica!"
The ember blade clattered to the ground, forgotten, as Harrod raced to Orica's side and gathered her up in his arms.
"Orica!"
The sound of his grief pierced them all. Aaron stood wearily, gathered up the bloody ember blade, and sheathed it. The others were clustered uncertainly at the far end of the bridge. They hadn't run, but nor could they celebrate Sorrow's death. All sense of triumph had been swept away by the loss that came with it. Aaron approached Harrod, drawn by the need to see if Orica lived, but he stopped at a distance. This was Harrod's tragedy. He didn't want to intrude.
"Speak to me,"
Harrod begged, holding her head up. Her eyes found him and focused, and he broke into a smile of desperate hope. But there was no coming back for her. Aaron knew it, and he saw Harrod's face fall as he realized it too. Sala was here to claim her.
"I love you,"
he told her, gasping the words, tears dripping from his eyes.
"I love you. I should have said it all along. Don't leave me, Orica. I love you."
Orica's hand lifted, trembling. Her eyes stayed fixed on his as it slid inside her clothes, searching for an inside pocket. Her gaze was fierce, as if to break connection with him would be to lose the last thing anchoring her to the world.
"I love you,"
he sobbed, as if by saying it again he could undo what had been done to her.
"Don't go."
From out of the pocket, she drew a folded sheaf of paper, wet at the edge with her blood. She took his hand and pressed it there. He hardly seemed to notice.
"I love you,"
he whispered again. Her lips parted as if to speak, but giving him the paper had taken the last of her. Her face went loose, and her body relaxed with a long sigh. Harrod's desolate scream cut Aaron to the heart, and he had to turn away. Nothing he could do would make anything better. All he could do was leave and let Harrod have his grief. He walked across the bridge to the others and passed without looking at them. Above and ahead, close enough to smell it, was freedom. With the ember blade in hand, he trudged towards the light. 108. A mossy stone door stood ajar at the top of the zigzag stair. By the looks of it, it hadn't been moved for centuries. The work of some forgotten delver, perhaps, or an old escape route lost to time. Aaron didn't care. He just wanted out. Beyond was a narrow cave passage, moonlight shining through a gash at the end. Aaron stepped out into the speckled night. He found himself on a ledge on a mountainside,
the moons hanging side by side in the sky before him. Behind him, out of sight, Hammerholt burned bright enough to light the undersides of the clouds. Spread out below was Lake Calagria, the black water glowing with the fire's reflected rage. Scattered lamps picked out the towns on the shore. He breathed in, smelling the smoke on the wind, and let it out again. He was alive. Just to exist was enough in this moment. He dared not think beyond that, to what life without Cade would mean. He was here, breathing, and that was victory of a sort. The others followed him onto the ledge, sank to the ground and rested, looking out over the vista or leaning against the rock. None of them spoke. No one had the words. Harrod was the last to arrive. He walked with Orica cradled in his arms, his blood-smeared face puffy and red with tears, his ridiculous hair in a mess. Silently they got to their feet again, and Fenn led them off the ledge, picking a way down the mountainside for them to follow. At Mara's suggestion, they'd buried maps, weapons and supplies in some woods by the lake the day before. A contingency plan, in case they had to escape cross-country. Fenn guided them back to the spot, and they unearthed their stash, washed the blood from themselves in a stream, and changed their clothes. Harrod put Orica's body down next to the water and cleaned her face and hands with a cloth, wiping it carefully across her skin, murmuring to her as he did so. When he was finished, he lifted her again. "She will not lie here beneath the trees," he said, his voice dull. "She always loved the open sky." "We will find a place for her," said Vika. They laid her to rest beside a shallow tarn in a reedy mountain meadow as dawn broke over the mountains. In the distance, visible between the peaks, Hammerholt still burned, a torch that could be seen as far as the Croden border. As was the Ossian way, she was placed in the ground with no marker, given to the mercy of the Lady of Worms. She'd go back to the earth she'd come from, dissolving into the land she'd loved. And as they grieved for Orica, they also grieved for Cade. While the others threw soil over her still body, Aaron's eyes were on the burning fortress that had taken his best friend. Vika prayed to Sala, for Orica and Cade, and Garrick too. Aaron couldn't even muster any anger at that name, even though he still blamed him for Cade's death. He'd been emptied by the past few hours. In the end, Garrick wasn't the villain Aaron's father had warned him about, nor the hero he'd once appeared. There were no heroes or villains here, or anywhere. He was just a man, flawed as the next, and he made his choices like the rest of them. Whether they were good choices or bad was a matter of perspective. When Vika was done, she stepped back from the grave and looked to Harrod. "Will you speak?" she asked him. "You, who knew her best?" He moved to the foot of her grave and looked down upon it. He was wearing his armour again, his velvets discarded, a knight once more. At last, he lifted his head, and in a high, frail voice he sang. "The king stood at his window in his castle on the shore. His family were sleeping, his foes were no more. As he looked o'er the sea, he heard knuckles on the door. 'Twas his seer, white as a ghost. 'Sire, please beware, for a storm does draw near that will tear down your walls and take all you hold dear.' But the king laughed and knew he had nothing to fear, and he turned his old eyes to the coast." His voice was weak and he could hardly hold a tune, but it didn't matter somehow. Aaron felt something stir inside him as he listened, a shred of defiance and battered pride amid the empty sadness. He couldn't let Harrod continue alone, and after hearing it so many times from Orica's lips, they all knew the words. Aaron lifted his voice with Harrod's, and one by one, the others did too. He said, "I see no clouds, and the waves are not high. Your omens mislead you, your bones fall awry.
But the seer said, "Sire, not all storms come from the sky. There are depths to which you cannot see. The tide is returning and coming right soon. It brings with it those you have sent to their doom. There's a wolf in the waves who yet howls from its tomb, and the fallen keep long memory." Then the king said, "You lie, for this is my land, passed on to me by fate's bloodied right hand." "But, sire," said the seer, "though you think you command, your rule is but fleeting here. There are elder things yet than the god you obey, and none may lay claim to this soil, try you may. For this land will be here after you pass away, and its children will still persevere." By now, all of them were singing, even Grub. Despite everything, Aaron's heart swelled at the sound. His hand went to the ember blade at his hip. For all it had cost, they'd done something miraculous tonight. Cade would have appreciated that. Said the king, "For this heresy I'll see you burn. I say destiny's charge is not easy to turn." But the seer shook his head. "Sire, you have much to learn, for the Urds said the same in their day." Now the king stands at his window and watches the sea, and he knows that his castle's no sanctuary, as he waits for the truth of the seer's prophecy and the storm that will sweep him away. Tears were running down Harrod's cheeks as the final line faded, and he stood trembling for a time. Finally, he reached inside his splint mail and took out the folded papers Orica had given him. He opened them up, revealing scribbled verses and pages of staves marked with musical notation. "Here is her song," he said. "Her masterpiece. It is all that is left of her. I say it will be the anthem of your revolution. I say we will spread it throughout this land until her words are on the lips of every bard, and all who hear it will know it as her call to arms. The Crodans will say death to all that play it, death to all that hear it, and they will play it anyway, in secret, in back rooms and behind closed doors. It will be a beacon of hope in the red days to come, when the Crodans bear down upon this land in vengeance for what we have done this night, and Ossian tears wash the streets. And when all is over, when you have driven the occupiers from your land, her name will be remembered forever, revered for all time in your histories." He waved the papers before them. "A song for a new Ossia, written by Asad, for this was her land as much as yours, and she has given her life for it." "The anthem of our revolution," said Aaron. "Well spoken. It shall be so." "Then my sword is yours," said Harrod, "until the day your land is free and the Sards are returned to it. That is my quest, taken in her name." He bowed his head and stepped away from the grave. Birdsong fluted in the lightening sky, and wind stirred the long grasses. "You know my mind," said Vika to them all. "The aspects set me on this path. A great darkness gathers, and the demons we faced tonight were the merest part of it. Whatever evil is coming, the Crodans are somehow involved, and so I will resist them to my last breath." Ruck barked in agreement. "My home is lost to me," said Fen, "and it always will be while Crodans rule in Ossia. Until they are gone, my home is here, with you." "My home is lost, too," said Mara, "but there is liberation in that. No longer will I live in a society that limits and forbids me. I will set my discoveries and inventions to use at last for the good of the resistance. My pupils may have lost their teacher, but I will see a day once again when no woman of this land will have her talents stifled and her thoughts curtailed by the Sanctorum and their damned kind." "We all have our reasons for revolution," said Aaron, "but this is our common cause." With a sharp ring, he drew the ember blade and brandished it before him, its blade touched with red in the first light of day. The sight of it inspired him and made his words reckless and brave. "Some will say the last Dawn Warden died tonight," he said, "but we will make liars of them. For though we hail from different lands and different stations in life, though we believe in different gods or none at all,
Tonight we reclaimed that which the Dawn Wardens lost. Tonight we earned the right to take on their mantle. He raked them all with his gaze, his face alive with conviction. We are the Dawn Wardens now.
Dawn Wardens? Us? Mara looked bewildered, but as the idea sank in, a light kindled in her eyes.
Yet, why not? We did win back the Ember Blade.
And who were the Dawn Wardens but the guardians of the Ember Blade? Said Vika, a wry smile growing on her face.
Long have our people wished for their return. It would not do to disappoint them.
Grub want to be a Dawn Warden,
Grub cried eagerly, bouncing up and down. We are all Dawn Wardens, Aaron said, swept up in the moment. He held the sword before him.
I swear I will protect the Ember Blade with my life, until such a day when it can be put into the hand of one who deserves to rule this land. I pledge myself to any who share this purpose, an unbreakable bond unto death. Will you swear with me?
I will, said Harrod grimly.
Aye, said Vika, her eyes creasing with approval. Ruck barked happily at her side. I think the Aspects would be pleased. I swear it, for the Ember Blade and for each other.
Me too, Grub said, and then cackled. Ha! Now you all have to be friends with Grub.
I am not given to grand gestures, said Mara, but I have kept my silence all my life, and my name has gone too long unrecognized. I will be a Dawn Warden. I swear with you.
And you? Aaron asked Fenn. Would you stand with us, knowing what's to come? Knowing we might all fall together?
Yes, she said softly,
and there was that look on her face that Aaron was coming to know, the one that sent fire through his veins.
I'll stand with you.
It is done then, said Aaron, and he thrust the sword back into its scabbard. Let us spread the word. The Dawn Wardens have returned, and they have the Ember Blade.
Grub cheered then, and they looked at each other with new eyes and a new sense of beginning. A shadow fell across Aaron as he thought of Cade, who should have been there with them. But it couldn't entirely darken the moment, and he still found it in himself to smile.
These mountains will be crawling with Crodans soon, Vika said. Whither now?
We can find shelter near Gallen Peak. I know people sympathetic to our cause, Mara said. You don't mix with traitors for years without picking up a few contacts.
We'll stay off the roads. Take the wild paths, said Fenn. These lands are new to me, but I'll get us there unseen.
Aaron shouldered his pack and took one last look around the meadow where the risen sun had turned the waving reeds to gold.
Then show us the way, Fenn, he said. We've work to do.
You have been listening to an Orion audiobook, The Ember Blade, by Chris Wooding, read by Simon Bubb. Produced by Chris French and Tom Harrison for RNIB. The text is copyright Chris Wooding 2018. The recording is copyright 2018 by Orion Publishing Group Limited. For information about other Orion audiobooks, visit the website at orionbooks.co.uk. To find out more about Chris, go to chriswooding.com.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.